Let's go! 3, 2, 1!
Welcome to another episode of Functional Fundamentals. I'm Dave.
I'm Mike.
I'm Brad.
And today we're going to talk about coaching. We're going to kind of readdress that subject of coaching because we've, I think we kind of talked about like the different styles of coaching about a year ago or...
About a year ago, yeah.
It was a while ago, but we've since, you know, had some new experiences in our own right. Both with being coached and coaching other people, so I think it'd be good just to kind of address it again.
Kind of get a better insight and how, well, one thing, like I told you, a little comment about how if I knew the stuff I know today, I would have been a better athlete.
Absolutely, yeah, we were talking about that, like how, like, if I had the, what I said was if I had the strength conditioning program now, that I have now back when I was, like, more of an active competitor, it would have been crazy.
You would have hurt people.
But also, where I'm at now is because I experienced, like, the lows of that time.
Mm-hmm.
And even during that time, I didn't necessarily think they were lows. I was just like, oh, this is what it is. Only through going through those trials and tribulations did I understand, like, what's best for me, like, personally, and what kind of environment I thrive in. Mm-hmm. If I had just been subjected to, like, the perfect environment without knowing it was, like, who knows what would happen. Probably get a big head.
Yeah. Well, again, like, I had the injuries in baseball, and I figured, oh, you know, if I would have never gotten hurt, I could have played many more years. But I also probably wouldn't have strived to figure out why people get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
When it was nothing of their – I mean, it was more their fault than, say, the environment of the sport.
Yeah.
You know, they just didn't move correctly. And then I made that comment before where – you know, I've spoken with some people, and I'm not saying I'm not mean, but I'm very direct when I say, okay, this isn't working, that's not working, this could be better, that could be better when it comes to movement. And some people are hard to hear that because a lot of the athletes we deal with they're high level. Their entire life they've been telling how great they are. So telling them how bad they are.
Yeah, they're like, well, I got 10 other people telling me that I'm great.
Right, but then you get injured. And we talked about before is...
R2-D2? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. R2-D2. I love R2-D2.
He's pretty cool, though.
Beep, yeah. Beep, boop. Uh-huh.
You see the beep, boop, beep, boop.
Yeah, he's the beep, boop, beep.
Where was I going with that?
You were getting the guy whose name that reminds me of R2-D2.
Oh.
RG3.
Yeah, yeah.
That's... Okay. See? We never go that route.
Brad brought us back.
Yep. So, his entire life, he probably was being told how great he was, but he had a lot of visible movement, like, deficiencies.
Turns out he's a terrible person.
Is he?
No, he's a good guy.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wow.
We will be getting sued because RG3 listens to us.
Yeah. Right. Well, he is in Cleveland now, so.
It's going to make it back to him.
No, he's like, Cleveland.
That Dave Bray motherfucker.
God. I knew this guy was a dick.
I'm going to come after
you. Douchebag.
There goes our Reebok contract. No, Nike. He's with Nike. I don't really care.
Anyway.
But, so, when it comes to the human performance, you want to be told what your weaknesses are and fix those weaknesses. It's like any other thing in life is, if we're doing a jiu-jitsu competition and you're bad escaping towards the left, well, don't, and you just never work it because you're bad at it. So you only work on what you're good at. So when you get caught in that position, you can only do this one thing, you won't be able to do it. And I always tell people, we're always going to work on the weaknesses. Like, we had the one athlete today do the Ronin.
And his Sean? Alex.
Alex. And his excuse.
Yeah, we're calling you out by name, Alex.
Yep. And he said, well, I don't do a lot of cardio.
Okay.
Well, sorry. I mean, we have to work on our weaknesses. And I told him the same thing.
I guess, well, when we run from a bear, you're going to be the one getting eaten.
His theory, I'm out. He'd be like, well, I'll just squat the bear, you know?
Yeah.
Come here, bear. Put you on your back. Which he probably could squat the damn thing. I can squat a house. But it's the difference between two things. He wants to do that, and we want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's not – and his response back to it was like, okay, he did it, and now he wants to do it again. He got that. Like,
it kind of lit a fire.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Right.
It's exciting. I personally think it's exciting to fail, like, at something. Because then you find out what type of person you're dealing with.
Yes.
To see someone fail, or like you yourself fail, it's like, okay, how are you gonna handle that now?
Just quit. Exactly. Well, I don't need to face that.
He didn't look great leaving. I mean, he was just like,
we thought he was gonna die.
He walked out of like, thank God, I'm out of here.
Stumbling.
I mean, he's not small.
Is he a powerlifting guy?
Well, no, he's not power. He's not very tall, but he's just thick.
Mm-hmm.
Thick.
Just a lot of muscle.
Girthy guy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's like a can of tuna.
Oh.
Not tall, just.
Right. All right. So, but he just had a lot of muscle. So he went through it, and when he got done, he laid down like the normal thing everyone does after they do the run, and just lay down for a second. And he just kind of walked. He's like, it wasn't normally. He's real talkative, and he's very curious.
Yeah, he just shut down.
He just kind of shut down and just goes, "All right, guys, I'm out of here. Like, just I'm gone." Truck.
Yeah.
All right. So then,
I didn't realize that was where. Like in the conversation.
Yeah. So then we get a hold of him a little bit ago, and he goes, "Yeah, my legs were done. I'm better, but I was just horrible." But like, now I want to do it again. And it's that tells you kind of the people you surround yourself with. I mean, it's not saying let's throw everybody and push them through the hardest 7 minutes we can physically put them through and see if they want to do it again. And I'm not saying that's what you do, but when you get around people like that. That you take them through something that's just unbearable, and then they said, "I want to do it again."
Well, I like the
fact you kind of want to keep them closer in that circle.
Because everybody has their own priorities. He said he doesn't work cardio. He works more like he wants to be strong, and that's fantastic. That's your own priority. You're sticking with your principles. You're not bending. But what it told me today, he's willing to step outside of his comfort zone, try something new, and. When he didn't do as well as he thought he would do, he wants to do it again. So he's willing to stay outside of his comfort zone. Because there's plenty of people that will step outside of their comfort zone and dabble and maybe not do as well as they did. And it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, oh, this is why I never step outside of my comfort zone, because this bad thing happens.
Yeah.
Now that just reaffirmed the reason I should stay within my own. No, he's like, you know what? I want to try it again. That's exciting. I like it. And it just proves that even when you surround yourself with people that have different... philosophies, ideals, you still share like a very similar, like general one of like self-improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I agree. You have to know essentially the population you're working with. So if you have someone who has never worked out in their life, morbidly obese, trying to start a workout regimen, you don't do that with them because they're not going to come back.
Go run 10 miles. Oh, it turns out you died.
Yeah, yeah. And you're never going to come back, even if you didn't die. And you're going to shy away from
it. They're like, nope.
Yeah, this is not for me. You got to take baby steps with them. And it's the same thing when I do nutrition counseling. And, you know, you have to assess where the person is. Do they have a low education or low health literacy? Or is this an elite athlete with a college degree?
Exactly.
Because you've got it in different directions. If you have someone with very low health literacy or education level... Maybe you spend an hour with them, but there's only one takeaway point that they're going to remember from it, and you have to make one small change with them at that time versus someone who's more well-educated, been around nutrition, they know the difference between the basics. You would set up multiple goals and things like that and work on multiple areas. So same thing with lifting. You just adjust it for the population you're working
with.
But that's coaching in a nutshell.
Yeah, and I think like one of the biggest hurdles for anybody – like. And this makes the difference between like essentially like a casual everyday person and like a quote unquote athlete. It's just the mindset of really like believing in yourself. And as corny as it sounds, but it's like you know that you can do better and pushing yourself. Whereas like the average person off the street, they don't know that yet. Mm-hmm. They don't know what they're capable of. They have no idea what untapped potential they're sitting on every single day. And, like, just getting over that mental hurdle can be huge.
Yeah, and I think when you have the general population with that mindset and they see the highest athletes, I'm like, man, he's so arrogant, he's so cocky. Just, you know, Muhammad Ali just passed and he had the quote about, you know, basically saying he was the greatest before he actually thought he was. Yeah. So it's kind of a certain mentality. And just like Luke Rockhold, the UFC, former UFC champion as of this weekend, he had a lot of... things saying about Anderson Silva leading up to this week, and it has nothing to do about him winning or losing this week, But you have to have that mindset of a champion of I am the best.
Yeah.
Or I have the ability to become the best. So I understand that being, I can't even say I'm in the middle of like
the people like person. To criticize it too. Yeah. Like, oh, he's full of himself. Like they like to say it afterwards. Like if someone keeps winning, they're like, oh, they're great, they're confident. They should be confident they're winning.
Yeah.
But the moment they lose, oh, they were overconfident. It's like, yeah. Come on, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
I saw on social media how, you know, when Rockwell got beat, just people, oh, he was never a good champion. He got caught from a weak hit.
Yeah.
I'm like, he got tagged right in the chin.
Which is,
I'm sorry. Like, I'm not a big fan of Bisping, but the guy has bricks for him.
Yeah.
He's not
a... He's a good fighter, too.
Yeah. He's a seasoned fighter, too. Like, it's not like he's like...
Shucked him right here on that chin.
Yeah. Anybody can get knocked out. It's not like... It's really not that difficult.
Plus, that has nothing to do about with his mentality.
Yeah, so exactly.
So Rockhold's mentality going into fight camp needs to be that of a champion with confidence. You absolutely. Can't come in there timid, like, oh, I'm scared. Like, I don't know if I can
do that. You're a freaking champion.
Yeah.
Plus, he comes from a good camp with some great coaching.
Yeah.
I mean, Vasquez is from his camp. Daniel Cormier is in his camp.
Mm-hmm.
So they have superior coaching. And, again, I always thought... My athletes, and I'm sure we've all mentioned before when we talk to people, is we don't want to train the weak, the ones that don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone we work with, they may not be a world champion, but when they leave this place, they will leave like a champion. Like, and they accomplish something well.
And sometimes they don't want to be a world champion, or they just want to improve.
But every day we try to make sure it's like, hey, I know this was the worst thing you went through today, but you achieved it. You finished it. Yeah. And there's workouts I put both you guys through where there was no rhyme or reason for it, and you guys weren't going to accomplish what I wanted you to do. I just wanted you to finish it. I just wanted you to get it done and just mentally.
You tricked us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of a dick move.
Well, it's a mental thing. It's a mental thing.
You lied.
You lied to
us. Bold-faced liar.
This is a terrible coach, one that lies to you.
I remember me having to do 205 something or others in the sun.
Yeah.
No reason.
Yeah.
Oh, all push presses.
Push presses.
Jesus. Presses. Those were terrible.
That was an awful day.
That was a mental thing.
Yeah. It was good.
Then you just ripped, then you just ripped your shirt completely off and you're like,
very out of character for me.
I know. That's the moment I fell in love. I can't help it.
Yeah. But again, things like that. But again, we have to know how to coach. I knew that I could put you guys in a program like that because you trusted me, and you guys put your faith in me
trust you.
You finished the workout, and you felt fine afterwards.
You're out to the circle of trust right here. Nobody else can see this right now. It's right here. You're over here.
That's kind of hurtful.
But, no, it's a good point to bring up. Like, it was because of the rapport that we had built and the relationship we had already established that you were comfortable pushing us.
Which goes back to what Brad said, is you have to be smart on who you put in those situations. You just can't take someone that just decided, hey, I want to work out first time ever in 10 years, and put him through a workout where mentally and physically...
You're going to do 3,000 meters on the road to warm up. Wait, what?
Yeah. Because there's no trust, there's none of that.
Yeah.
Now, if you say you worked out to this person for a year, and they're still very overweight and very deconditioned, but they trust you. If I say you throw 3,000 meters, you'd be like, all right, I mean, he's been right so far.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go ahead and do it. And it's like if you prescribe somebody to eat something correctly and they're not really sure about it, you know, they'll get that, the rapport, and be like, all right, he told me to eat it, I'll eat it.
Yeah. Rapport is very big in nutrition counseling because there's a lot of people who have their own fallacies of what they believe about nutrition, what they don't believe. And sometimes... You have to correct those fallacies. So, I mean, you really need to have that rapport and trust because initially people head on meet you with resistance and you have to establish, you know what you're talking about and understand where this information you're telling them comes from. So.
Yeah, true.
Word.
And that's one of the biggest things with coaching is trust. And you see a lot of these trainers out there, and that's why I'm going to label them as, they read the latest magazine. They see something on YouTube, or they have a trainer themselves or a coach themselves, and they're like, wow, I did this workout with my coach. I'm going to take you through the same thing.
Yeah, they're just like mama bird.
And then when the client or the athlete says, hey, my shoulder hurts, my elbow hurts, instead of the trainer being, you know, let me see what, let's try this movement pattern, let's try this movement pattern and see if it feels better, or let's find out what it is, they're just like, oh, let's just move to something else. They just disregard it because it's almost like, I don't really care if your arm hurts. I only have you for 20 more minutes, so let's just move on.
Right.
And it's hard for, and for me, and as a coach sees that, I'm thinking, you're never going to build rapport for your athlete, because you're not showing, you're not going out of the way to show that you actually care about their body. You just care about your time and how much they pay you. That's what it looks like. And I could be completely off base, but it'd be like you doing nutritional advice with somebody, and then you're saying, this is what you need to eat, this is what all your levels and your blood, and this is what it has to, this is what we know is best for you. And like, well, I don't like that. I'm like, well, then don't eat it. Like, fine, then. It's like you're not even going to try if there's any pushback. You're like, too much work.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, as a coach, in some way, you have to cut your losses. Maybe they're not going to get 100% of the pitcher, but what percent can you sneak in there or get them to?
Yeah,
and then over time, you can
get to 100%. Go at it at a different angle.
Yeah, absolutely. You really have to work with the client, patient, resident, whatever you're whoever you're working with, you have to take that approach with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you, Brad, probably have to do that more than Mike.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, like, making those compromises and just like, okay, well, what can I get? Like, what can we get out of this session?
Yeah, because there's so many people you meet that have this matter-of-fact attitude about nutrition. And it could just be completely... One of my favorite ones comes from the paleo CrossFit area where was like, well, no, my trainer said I can eat any amount of bacon I want as long as it's nitrate-free. So I'm going to do that. No matter what you tell me, I am not going to listen to it because that is wrong.
Right.
So the person's to me for weight loss, but she's saying I'm going to eat copious amounts of bacon long as it's nitrate-free. Her fitness instructor, and there's nothing that I can say that will ever change her mind. Okay, well, you have to that's a loss right there. You do your due diligence saying how that's not correct, but you move on. You don't harp on it for 45 minutes or an hour. You just move on. Well, where can we work around this? And maybe you can't help her as much as she wants to be helped because of that, but you just try to do what you can do.
And that's the thing. That's also being a good coach is when to cut your losses and put more time and effort into people that actually want it.
Yeah, and you have that conversation, you know, later on. If that person wants to keep meeting with you and you see that there's a big barrier that can't be overcome because of their thought process, you have that uncomfortable, decision to say, hey, you know, maybe I'm not the best fit for you because of X, Y, and Z. You know, I don't want to waste your time and money. You know, maybe you'd be best going to a CrossFit or a CrossFit coach, or whoever else, because that's more of their mental model. You're kind of jiving on that, and hopefully you can make progress. Yeah. But
eat your bacon, drink the grease.
Bacon and burpees.
There you go.
10 bacon, or 10 pieces of bacon, 10 burpees.
There you go.
Bacon, burpees.
Trademark.
Bacon, but that's workout of the day.
No croutons.
Wad.
So much bacon.
So wad.
Because it has gluten in it. Croutons, so bacon, you can eat all you want.
All of it.
Gluten-free.
Yep. You can actually...
Bacon and burpees.
What you do.
And bench press.
You cook up the bacon. You throw it in a blender. Get nice and liquefied. Take a syringe.
Ooh, yeah.
And then just inject it.
It's like the only way to have a stroke and a heart attack at the same time.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
I smell toast. Ooh. My arm.
That's disgusting.
Oh, you guys haven't done that?
No, that lightly. No.
We usually shoot Dave up when you leave.
So. Oh.
Yeah.
With Dave.
Both.
I hit one, he hit the other.
Oh, man.
How do you do that? Because your arm's bent.
It's the rest. Well, you see how I'm so vascular? So I hit that, and then Brad, comes on one of those top veins.
Just stabs and shoots it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, we're not necessarily going for a vein. If we hit it, it's like a happy coincidence.
That's what all the trap
he actually goes.
Are.
He goes in the neck. He goes in the artery.
Internal jugular.
You're just like, bacon right in the neck.
And I'm just like, oh. And you like taste it. You get just like, you taste it for like 3 days. You just taste bacon
taste
everything.
Or a little bit of blood just coming through.
Tiny little bit of iron, but it's okay. It's normal. Maybe you spit up a couple blood clots every once in a while.
No big deal. All right.
I've only had a couple aneurysms.
Let's go back away from that. And please, no one ever shoot bacon directly in mainline it right into your stream. That's
no, tell you what, if you do it, send me a video.
How? How will they send you a video? They'll be dead.
The second time we're sued off this one episode.
Yeah. Jeez. No, actually, we're going to sue twice. The Prophet's going to sue us, then the bacon company.
RG3 is definitely.
RG0, he's going to sue us.
Long time listener.
Okay, fine, don't do it.
Yeah.
But seriously, do it.
All right, so you tell us about your experience today being a coach, and
when I got to coach a little bit.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, it was good. I come from a very like when I'm coached, I like positive vibes.
Positive vibes.
A lot of positive vibes. So when I was taking on when Sean was working with us, because essentially you got a phase, Alex got a phase, and then I got a phase. So, I mean, as far as the workout, it was fine, but, like, I was a little bit, I had some challenges with it. Not anything bad, but, like, I tend to be more positive, but I also, like you pointed out, I'm quiet, like, when I'm coaching. Like, it almost seems like I'm observing more, like, just watching them, whereas you told me, like, I need to kind of get in their head a little bit more and just essentially, like, be more vocal. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was able to take away from today. As far as like the actual coaching, I mean, I like it working with the competitors. I don't know how well I would be able to coach like just an average person. I think because I've been in like combat sports for like a decade, so like I know these guys. I kind of know what makes them tick, and I know what buttons to push. Like, yo, I can relate things, and just like, you need to sprint. This is the last 30 seconds of a fight. And then all of a sudden you see him pick it up.
Yeah.
There's just little phrases you can say. And you're just like, hey, this is the last 30 seconds. Like, you need to pick it up. And they automatically do it. Like, they know what that means. Like, those finish strong. Like, that's a very common phrase in it. But also, like you said, I need to, like, really just repeat myself more and more and more so they hear me in their head. And they're constantly, because there's so much you forget, like, when you're working out. Like, little things. Like, it sounds silly, like, watching someone else work out, and you're like, why is he telling them to breathe? Like, everybody knows how to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's pretty common to hold your breath when you're struggling on something. And it's weird. It's almost involuntary. And you do literally have to remind yourself, oh, I need to breathe right here.
Mm-hmm.
So, just those small things. But
and breathing relaxes you.
Exactly. So I was able to pull a little bit away from it. But I think, like, as far as, like, my style of coaching is going to be more of a positive one. I don't like the negative reinforcement. I mean, it can be used, but not...
Well, you used it in a good way today.
Right.
You gave him a punishment.
Yeah, and I was like, hey,
he
didn't
achieve a certain goal, so... And that's a good way of... I guess it's like an oxymoron, like a negative-positive reinforcement.
Yeah. It's like, okay, this quote-unquote punishment, it's still going to be, like, you're still going to benefit from it, but now you have, it's more of an incentive. You had an incentive to do, like, the best you could, and he did the best he could, but now he knows, like, oh, if he was able to do that well, like, next time he can push himself a little bit better, and a little bit better, and a little bit better. So it's like that, you want to leave him wanting just a little bit.
Yep, and he seemed like that.
Yeah.
And then the reason I told you about talk more, it goes back to that thing of being trust. The more you talk to the individual and let him know your paying attention, let him know that,
yeah, just I got you. I'm not like mindlessly on my phone like you, like, see some people in the
head
gym.
Up, you know,
like, oh snap, Instagram,
and then you say, hey, make sure your knees are out, you drive through the hips,
yeah,
it's gonna protect
so I'm really paying attention and like, hey, I got you.
I think it's really important about the form, because when you're struggling, you know, that's something that goes away. And to me, when I'm with a trainer or coach or whatever, I want my safety and form to be there first and foremost. The weight, the time, whatever the rule of thumb is, doesn't really matter as much, because if you accomplish the weight and you have shitty form, you're gonna hurt yourself eventually. So
absolutely.
If you're coaching someone and you're correcting their form, that's, you're doing your job. Yeah, you want to push them farther than they would normally push themselves, but you want to do it in a safe manner where, you know, they're benefiting from your knowledge, essentially.
Yeah, and that's it's funny that, because Mike and I discussed that exact same thing, like, because, like, more people have been coming to work out on Sundays, like, I don't normally get, like, a one-on-one session very much anymore. So today, when we did get a one-on-one session, I kind of knew where it was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, like, we're going to lift something heavy. because now he has the attention to give to me when I'm lifting something heavy. Like, he can actually coach me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't, like, want anything else other than that. Like, I don't want to lift a lot of weight unless I know that I got my guy who has my back.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then it's, so there's a different kind of coaching. So, Mike, that kind of leads into with you. Like, you've been working with more people at once lately, like, mm-hmm. more of a group setting. What are some, like, differences, challenges that you've experienced with that?
Well, there's two approaches that I've done it with. Is there's a progression, which is basically a circuit. So we have 10 guys, we have 10 different exercises. You rotate on a clock, just boom, 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 boom. That's just a simple kind of run-of-the-mill, and I kind of do that when I don't know anybody's fitness level. And it's a safe way, because it's like squats, push-ups.
So these are all, like, not, like, the failure is not catastrophic.
No, it's like if their form fails on a push-up, they're just not getting the best out of it. If their form fails on a bodyweight squat, they're just not getting the most out of it. So you put them in situations where you know you're not going to be able to wash them completely because there's too many people, but you put it on a time frame saying, okay, you have a minute to do as many as you can. It's all on you.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that route. And the other route to it would be is for the ones that actually I know a little bit about their fitness level, I like to pair them up into teams. You know, say if we have, again, 10 people, 5 on one team, 5 on the other, and do a circuit where it's, okay, let's, you guys have to do the, like, your team has to do 500 burpees before that team, or 500 rope slams, something like that. You give a number and say, first one to that.
Except the intensity low.
Mm-hmm. But you pick exercises where you know that the movement itself, if it's not done well, you're not really going to injure the individual
right.
with that many people. Now, when it comes to strength training, you try to get them in a nice, neat little group, and then you do things like a push press with dumbbells or kettlebell swing, something where you can control really easily. Like, hey, just drive the hips, drive the hips, drive the knees, where you don't need to, like, again, I can't have everyone deadlifting 300 pounds. It just won't work. There's too many people, and there's too many things that can go wrong. But the way I've learned is just simpler movements just done really, really fast or really, really long. I mean, I'm not a big fan of doing big, big groups, especially when I see a lot of deficiencies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I made a big group the other day do bear crawls, and they look atrocious.
So that's where it's good to have, like, multiple people. Like, why I'm there with you on Sundays, essentially, with when we know the group can be a little larger.
Mm-hmm.
So you, like, kind of running, like, maybe, like, one half of it, and then I get to keep an eye on the other half, and then
right.
we'll alternate.
Mm-hmm.
So that they get that attention to those deficiencies.
Right. And like, at the groups you're talking about, we're working with fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much all fighters have a deficiency.
Absolutely.
None of them move perfectly.
No.
So when I tell them to do a simple movement, you're going to see one movement here done really, really well, and then one here done atrocious, and the other one here a horrible as well, but it's horrible in its different way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this person has horrible shows because it's different.
It's so spotty because also they have their own preferred way of fighting and way of taking care of things and way of just grinding through things. Because, I mean, with training in combat sports, you are, like, kind of encouraged to develop your own style.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no right or wrong in that regard as far as your own style of fighting.
I've come to see some wrong, though, when it comes to how striking coaches and jiu-jitsu coaches and MMA coaches teach strength and conditioning.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they shouldn't be teaching strength and conditioning.
Not at all.
And we're talking about, like, style, or, like, as far as, like, technique. Like, there are 100 different ways to throw a punch.
Yeah, true.
Figure out your own way. I'm talking about that. As far as, like, and my big gripe with those jiu-jitsu guys, Thai guys, MMA guys, stick with your subject. The students are paying a premium to learn that specific art, that specific skill. You shouldn't be doing strength and conditioning.
You shouldn't be giving nutrition advice. You shouldn't be giving life advice.
No.
You're not a life coach.
Exactly. Like, no, you should stick to, if you're a jiu-jitsu coach, stick with jiu-jitsu. I don't need your conditioning. Like, conditioning, like, if you become more conditioned, that's a byproduct of jiu-jitsu, just of repetitive technique. But, no, don't give me nutrition advice because that's not your strength. So these people that want to practice outside of their scope, like, shame on you. You're doing a disservice to yourself. You're doing a disservice to your students.
Mm-hmm.
Stay away from it.
And that's the one thing I've seen a lot of. And you probably, again, like, you talk about the CrossFit saying, well, I'm only going to eat bacon with no nitrates in it. they're told information that wasn't highly correctly. Because when I'm teaching people, and again, when it comes to, say, throwing a punch, there's 100 different ways to throw a punch from different coaches. There's only one way to do a kettlebell swing. There's only one proper way to do a deadlift.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's not 100 different ways.
There's years and years of science behind it.
Well, it's like, just
this
it's
is the
leverage.
Human body.
It's
okay?
Just levers of the body and biomechanics.
You don't have three joints where someone else has two joints. You're not. I mean, maybe, but most people are very similar in their their body mechanics.
The form is done this way. This is how it's supposed to be done. This is where you get the most out of your body. So when I told someone to do kettlebell swing, and this was a couple weeks ago, they're like, "Well, I do it this way." What way?
You do it wrong.
Like, that's like, who taught you how to do it? Well, and then, so you're seeing, you have 10 fighters and all of them fought differently or worked different crafts, and they're all getting told by 10 different people how to do a deadlift or do a kettlebell swing or a burpee.
Yeah.
It's like, a burpee is the simplest thing. You fall down, you jump up.
Yeah.
They're jumping up, throwing their hands high, or jumping up, throwing a punch, jumping up, kicking their knees, and thinking, what?
Doesn't make sense. Just do the burpee.
Right.
And, like, and the move in itself is enough. I think it's like, these quote-unquote coaches that want to do a conditioning program, so they think they need to, like, jazz it up, like, dress up a move and make it, like, fancier, like, oh, we can do a burpee, but a burpee's too simple. No, homie, most people can't do a burpee correctly, so maybe just learn how to do that correctly and stick with it.
Absolutely. I mean, I always find it funny when I see coaches say, well, we do sport-specific. What do you mean sport-specific?
There's a sport-specific burpee for a tie fight.
Well,
sport-specific
we'll jump in one
knee
real quick. That's the sport-specific. No.
Oh, really?
Again.
Like, okay, you're going to knock down the ground. The first thing you're going to do is jump up and knee him?
Yeah.
Let me see.
Well, it's like when I see people do – when I trained at, like, say, a golfer, for instance, we'll do exercises. We'll do a lot of lateral
swing the club and then do a burpee and swing the club and do a burpee.
Yeah, we want to make it do that because it's sport-specific.
Yeah.
But I'll talk to some other people that have worked with other strength coaches, and they'll come see me. And they're like, yeah, we just want to work with you. We heard some things. Okay. We take them through a thing, and they're like, how is this going to help me with golf? Oh, I'll break it down. Well, this movement, this movement, this movement. Well, my coach makes us, you know, do this.
He makes us do cartwheels when we pick up the ball from the hole. Sports specific.
Well, the best one is rotation. Like, they'll say, well, we're supposed to get in our golf stance and rotate like we're golfing through it. I'm like, okay, when you're going to play golf with 60 pounds resistance.
Yeah.
And because I'll tell them to do it this way, like, you know, step with the front foot, rotate hips hard, extend through, really extend through your shoulders, you know, basically turn as quick as you can, but using your shoulders, your hips. And it doesn't look like a golf swing. It looks like a powerful rotational movement. And they're saying, well, how is this golf specific? It's not. It's rotational specific, which golf is a rotational
movement.
Yeah,
there's no such thing as sport specific.
Well,
it's
when it comes to sports, it's movement specific, exactly. Because when you do sport specific training, you can't train like your sport.
No,
because your sport doesn't have the resistance.
Do the
free flow.
If you want to train the sport,
exactly.
Don't do it within your strength and conditioning program.
No, you just learn you specificize the movement. So if I want to learn baseball, I want to be better left of right movement. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to probably push a sled left and push a sled right.
Yeah,
I'm working left and right so I can move better left to right. It's not a specifically for that sport. It's a specific movement.
Yeah.
So golf, I'm trying to rotate with more velocity. Well, let's learn on how to develop rotational movement. But then once you learn how to rotate well, same with fighting. Once I learn how to rotate well and generate force through the ground, then I take that movement and apply it to the skill of punching or swinging a golf club. That's the specificity. That's the sport-specific movement.
It's
the training of
it. Honestly, I think an issue is like, the montages from sports movies or action movies, and they see that it's like shoddy training. So say like you talk about golfing, and they all of a sudden in a montage they're going, you know, we're not going to swing with a normal golf club. We're going to swing with a lead golf club that weighs 120 pounds, and you swing that and you get so good, and then all of a sudden your normal swing with an average golf club is just so much better because you're used to doing 120 pounds. No. It doesn't work like that. Same way, the reason that people are like those people that walk around, they think they can just wear ankle weights and it just improves everything.
Right.
No.
It actually ruins more of your gait than
it
anything.
It doesn't. Yeah, exactly. You're creating a deficiency. You need to practice the movement without resistance before you add resistance.
But that's the thing that.
And even then, you don't go like heavy weight on these like random movements. It's like, same thing like, oh, like for judo, imagine if it's like you had like a. a 300-pound dummy. Oh, if you can throw this, you can throw an average person. Well, you just threw your back out.
Yeah.
Like, that's all you're doing. And you're creating a situation for a deficiency to occur or a catastrophic injury. Because you're the thing is, when you ask your body to do something, to move a certain way, your body's going to do its best to do it. But your body can't tell if it's efficient or non-efficient. It's just, it's reacting to what your command to do. It's like, okay, like, I'm going to do it. Oh, crap, like, these primaries aren't firing. I'm going to go to the secondaries. I'm going to go to the tertiaries. Like, I'm going to try to finish it. Yeah. And then you keep doing that over and over and over, and then something's going to break.
You're right. I mean, that's the thing is, and I hear it a lot when, you know, I'll go to these trade shows or I'll go to these fitness conferences and it's the same thing. They're like, oh, what do you train? Oh, I train these athletes. Oh, why those athletes? Well, it's because the movement patterns are the same. But the sports are different.
Well, they also kiss the best.
Well, they do. I mean, all those fighters, man, they kiss well.
So much pent-up aggression.
I know.
Give me that taste.
The golfers are nice and supple.
Give me that taste.
But, I mean, that's the thing I always tell you guys is that, you know, I can take a golfer, a baseball player, and a fighter and put them in the same program.
Yeah,
and they'll all improve for their skill they need, and it's because they all dominate in rotational movement, and that's the thing I try to tell a lot of these people at these trade shows is, it's not the same. It is the same movement. It's a different skill. Again, someone throwing a baseball and someone punching and hitting a golf ball, those are different skills, and those may not translate through to the movements or to the sports, but the movements are all the same from. The ground up to the hips, it's the same movement. It's almost identical.
Yeah, it's when skill comes into play.
That's a different form of coaching.
Your patterns and your skill patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Your movement patterns plus your skill. Yeah, exactly. They try to lump them all into one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, no, that's a skill. No. You have your movement pattern and you have a skill.
Yeah. Well, I see guys like there were some guys – well, today, not at Ronin, but at some other, like at Ronin, I've seen guys before, they'll get the little 5-pound weights and act like they're boxing, or they'll get the bands and put around their back and act like they're boxing.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking, okay, I understand what you're trying to do. You're building up resistance on a punch, but you're still using your shoulders. And they don't realize that power from your punch doesn't come from your shoulder whip, it comes from your ground force. It comes from how well you can drive into the ground and rotate the hip.
Mm-hmm.
So they're missing it. They're thinking, I'm just gonna do this because
it was
good.
Like, I'm sure that was developed with the best intentions because
mm-hmm.
they're like, oh,
probably
like
in the 70s.
In a fight, like your hands get heavy, like so this is gonna simulate your hands being heavy near the end of a fight and you need to still be able to throw the punch.
But then go to the leverage of why your hands are heavy, it's because your shoulders are tired.
Yeah,
so not maximizing your potential with the ground.
Exactly,
right.
Exactly. So now it's like, oh, I'm creating my shoulders to be tired,
mm-hmm.
and all you're doing is replicating the situation. You're not addressing the root of the problem. It's a Band-Aid. You're not teaching them how to actually throw a punch from their hips, not using so much shoulders.
Exactly. It's like when I hear a baseball player saying, oh, my elbow and my chest hurts from throwing a baseball. It's just normal soreness. I'm like, no, it's not. It's not normal soreness. If you're sore in the butt and the upper back, that's good soreness. It's not normal. It's good. If you hurt anteriorly throwing a baseball, you're doing it wrong. But they're like, well, I throw this med ball this way, and I do all this stuff that's baseball specific when I'm in the weight room. Well, you're doing it wrong. And when people say I do baseball specific workouts, what the hell does that mean?
You know what a baseball specific workout is?
Throwing baseball?
Yeah, baseball.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
I do volleyball specific workouts. Oh, what do you do?
I play
volleyball.
Yeah.
Just lay out in the sun.
Yeah, I just lay out in the
beach.
But
I mean, again, like you saw that one person kind of lingering today, and he probably thought he was doing Thai specific workouts because everything he was doing was mimic a Thai movement.
Yeah.
But it won't
turns
help
out he's just being super creepy and making me uncomfortable and nearly got it hurt because of it.
But again, I have one athlete and she was saying, I told you today, like she was telling me that the striking coach was saying she's hitting harder. We agreed that the striking coach wouldn't BS her about that.
All right, yeah, her teammate.
Mm-hmm. And we haven't done one thing that mimics kicking or punching or mm-hmm. anything like that. We've done some rotational movement stuff. We've done a lot of posterior strength like deadlifts and med ball slams and pull-ups. We've done a lot of that kind of stuff. We haven't mimicked anything that would say, oh, that's a fighter. Because people come up to me and ask me before, she's like, oh, is she an athlete? Yeah. Oh, what sport she play? She play soccer? No. Does she play soccer? But it's because
she can if she wants.
She can.
She's fit.
But that's the thing is, you do the workouts, you won't know that they're that athlete, this athlete. That most of my people think my athletes that I train that are golfers think are baseball players because we do a lot of rotational movements. And we do it because most golfers don't know how to get the ground
force. Well, you had me in there working with a golfer.
Right. And no one would, and you wouldn't know she was a golfer?
No. We just did a workout.
Right. And then
it was our job to take those movement patterns and then combine it with the skill that we know for something entirely different.
Yeah. And she's a phenomenal golfer.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that people don't get is you work the movement. And that's why I think a lot of people fail. Because I've had other trainers talk to me like, hey, I want to work on a sprinter. What do you think I should work on? Make them run. Well, that's their sport. That's because they're trying to say, how can I make their workouts more sport specific? Run.
Run a lot.
They're runners? Yeah. Run. Make them run. What about using a sled, stuff like that? Well, you can, but that's actually could make them worse because you're building up bulk in muscles that should be non-bulky and more explosive. But if you want to build up a runner, the best way to do it is build up the hamstrings and the glutes.
Yeah.
Which would be hamstring curls, squats, and deadlifts.
Okay, are they a long distance runner? Are they medium? Are they a sprinter?
These are track people, so they're sprinters.
Like,
yeah.
Sprinters, maybe it makes a little sense to get like a little more explosion in the legs, but you talked about building up the hamstrings.
Mm-hmm. Doing a sled pull.
Mm-hmm.
Doing a sled pull for a long distance runner is pointless.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they don't need it.
But for a sprinter.
Right. I mean, for a long distance runner, what you want to do is basically say, here's 10 pounds, do 100 of these as fast as you can. That would be a long distance runner's workout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do 100 squats as quick as you can. You want high reps very, very quickly. Sprinters, you don't really need as much reps, you just need more explosion. But you don't.
Because you got the takeoff.
Well, it's funny. I see coaches all the time, they'll do sprints with their running athletes, and they'll have them on the treadmill sprinting. Thinking, why? They get enough sprinting when they do that thing. Why don't what you do is have them run track, sprint it, time them, then take them through a program, build up their hamstrings, their glutes. Things that typically hurt sprinters is poor hamstring lengthening because their groins are too tight and their hips flexors are too tight.
Mm-hmm.
Fix that, increase their abdomen strength, increase their ground force, and then train that, and then put them on and let them run again and see how they go. You don't really need to do by... I'm kind of lost my train of thought a little bit, but because it kind of ticks me off when I see it.
Well, I'm just going to stop you there and say, nah, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do sports specific.
Yeah. Then we're done.
We're done.
But, okay, like I've seen exercise before. Like, you know when someone runs, you know, they're supposed to drive that hand up?
Yeah.
Well, I've seen coaches, more than one, where they'll have the athlete grab a cable cross, and they'll just mimic this motion with the cable cross. So they'll pull that through. I'm thinking,
okay. Your entire body.
Well, that movement is just a shoulder movement.
Yeah.
You using 20 pounds or 30 pounds on the cable cross is not going to increase that torque through it. Because when our arm goes through, if it's not connected to this sling system of the transversal movement in the hip, it's not going to work. You look at it, they're like, oh, that looks like a runner. Maybe attachment or resistance to it.
Right.
That's not how it works. It's take that movement. Not the skill of the move. Not the skill itself.
Right.
And so many people have that. So when I read articles, I still see it. Like the one article I wrote to you, which I would like you to kind of touch on a little bit here at the end, about the nutritional article I sent you.
Oh, the gut bacteria?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll read in the same kind of website, I'll get these things like, oh, sports-specific training for waterboarding. Sports specific, or not waterboarding, but, you know.
Is it waterboarding?
Sport training?
Sorry. Yeah. Wakeboarding.
Okay, now. Now, is this sports-specific for the waterboarder or the waterboardee?
I don't know.
Let's get off.
I like to be tortured.
Let's get off the waterboarding.
I'm kind of into
wakeboarding.
It.
Wakeboarding.
Oh, that's boring.
Or sports-specific for baseball, basketball. You know, you get these things all the time. Oh, do this movement, it'll make you a better basketball player. Well, no, it won't. It'll make you a better athlete. Your coach will make you a better basketball player because, to be honest, if I can jump 45 inches, it's not going to make me a better shooter.
Yeah, because, like, you might not even have your gun ready. Might be in the holster.
All right.
He's so frustrated right now.
I am. I'm trying to be serious.
You're worked up.
I just derailed you so bad.
I'm done. All right, fine. You guys give me the last points on your ideals of coaching and what is you think is either a benefit or a defect with the coaching we see today.
Like I said earlier, I think coaches need to stay within their own scope. Stop trying to branch out. Stop trying to be a one-stop shop. If you teach jiu-jitsu, teach jiu-jitsu. You shouldn't be teaching strength conditioning, blah, blah, blah. And the thing is, you need to be able to exercise the right amount of restraint when people come up and ask you things. It's absolutely fine to say you don't know and refer someone to someone else.
Yeah.
Like,
but that would admit weakness.
And exactly. And yeah, you're not this infallible being. Like, you need to admit when you don't know something. Because nobody knows everything. That's why we have societies where we collaborate and we build things. Like,
and have other professionals.
We are a very, like, social species. And that's why we've adapted and, like, progressed as far as we have. It's not like just one person has made all these breakthroughs. Mm-hmm. It's always been a team. So, really, like, know where you're strong and know where you're weak. And then also, don't confuse movement patterns for skill. Skill sets, like, they are two different things, and it's maybe it's tough to differentiate when you haven't, like, been in that field a lot, but movement pattern, skill, two different things.
Yeah. Train the movement pattern at the skill, because I can't train a jiu-jitsu guy or a Thai guy in a weight room because we don't have a mat, we don't have a bag. Right. We have weights to mimic, to make them stronger where they're deficient, and that's the key.
Yeah.
Like we always talk about, our job is to make a better human, a better athlete. And in turn, they'll be better whatever they're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. And then as far as what Dave was saying, I kind of, that's where my thought process was going, not being a one-stop shop and just general person, be specific. But also, just because you're a coach doesn't mean that you can service every client. I mean, it's all right to have differences in opinions and theories and just say, hey, this is not, maybe we're not a good fit.
Exactly, yeah. Know when to set the, like, have those boundaries like you've talked mm-hmm. about and really stick with your principles. Don't sit there and compromise for everybody that walks up.
It's okay to say, I don't know, I need help.
Yeah.
I want you to touch on that article a little bit.
Jeez, I don't even, I remember it was about gut bacteria. Are we allowed to say the source? Huffington?
Yeah, you can say the source.
Washington Post?
Is it Washington or was it Huffington Post?
I thought it was Washington.
It was Washington Post.
Oh, Washington Post. All right. Is actually, usually the stuff Mike sends me is not too great.
Well, I said it to you to round you up a bit.
Yeah.
This one, I read it, and I wanted to get your opinion. Is this, do you agree or disagree?
Yeah, it was a very legit, informative post that was pretty accurate from the current scientific literature about gut bacteria and how basically keeping a healthy gut, and it kind of basically saying, you know, you have this microbiome, almost like a mini universe of, you know, bacteria in your body, and that is affected by the things you eat and the things you do and how your thought processes go, and it's one interchangeable system. Most notably, like, serotonin, people think of that as, like, your mood. And being in your brain, but the bulk of serotonin is actually around your gut, which affects your microbiome and gut bacteria. And it was kind of touching a little bit about that and kind of touching on how inflammation screws up that microbiome and that healthy gut bacteria. So whether it's inflammation caused by emotional distress or inflammation caused by poor eating habits, it's really hard. As far as we know, which we don't know the whole scope of our bodies yet, it's essentially saying both aspects of the mind-body connection influence inflammation and the gut bacteria, and it's very receptive to the things that you put in your body. Some things that negatively influence your gut bacteria would be things that cause a lot of inflammation, highly processed foods, copious amounts of simple sugars, red meat, things that positively influence it, fiber, and we always try to push that from plant-based sources rather than supplements. And then also fermented foods, and they even...
Sauerkraut, pickles.
Yep. Kimchi, beer was in there. Obviously, we're not talking about drinking six-pack, but they're just saying just drinking a beer or having cheese and... again, I don't want people to think this is something that is like, oh, beer is good, cheese is good. It's very dose dependent, just like anything in life. So it kind of went through that and touched a lot about the care in maintaining that gut bacteria. So it was a really good article. kudos to the Washington Post. I'm not very familiar with a lot of the stuff they post, but just from this one article, it was spot on as far as everything that was in there for the current research. And this is an initiative that the government's getting involved in, and a lot of the researchers have been involved in, of trying to establish more of the connection to the chronic illnesses and how that influences our health and how we can better control that. Because up to this point, it's been kind of confusing, and that's where the probiotics and prebiotics people get, like, jumping on the bandwagon, like, oh, it's so great. It's kind of not been proved effective, and maybe they have it backwards of having a healthy gut comes from healthy eating habits, not that you're just going to take these...
Pop a pill,
and you're going to have these benefits.
Some magical...
Yeah.
Cure-all, panacea.
Yeah, exactly. So, kudos to them.
I'll post that. I'll link that on... social media, the show notes and stuff like that.
But. Yeah, that'd be good. Because I even like not being as well versed as Brad in the nutrition field, I still like it was able to resonate with me. So I think a lot of people can benefit from it.
Yeah, I mean it's always good to get those some articles because you always want to know whether or not they're true or not. And I have the benefit of having you when I see those nutritional articles to send to you. Like, I'll read them, like, okay, it sounded good, but, I mean, with my knowledge when it comes to nutrition, I can be easily persuaded with good facts.
Yeah, and it's hard. Honestly, it's hard, too, because it's not like we don't know everything. It's not white and black, true and false. It's what is the common theme from science right now in the latest research, what is the fringe science, what is some upcoming theories that may have a paradigm shift changing the general theme. So it's hard to differentiate that between just quacky stuff that is just way out there.
It's like the article of benefits being fat.
Yeah. Right. And then maybe there are some factual things to that, but then the way journalism and journalists spin that to get attention and clickbait sends the wrong message to the layperson and has an adverse effect on the community, from my opinion.
Makes sense. Last words, anyone? Is that good?
Nope, it's good.
Good?
Just these.
Ha ha ha! Good show!